welcome to another special episode of Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley and Emilio Dinello. This episode will be an interview with BBC World Football correspondent Raphael Geller in Israel, who should be joining us shortly. Raphael is on the show to shed some light on a few topics. He has watched Brighton and Hove Albion very closely this season and will tell us about their dramatic turnaround from 20th two seasons ago all the way to third this season. Can Fulham do a similar turnaround? I don't know, but we will discuss how Brighton did it. We will also ask him his thoughts on Slavisa in his first season in charge of Fulham. We have much to get through, and it looks like one of my co-hosts is on the line. I'm going to bring him on. It looks like Raphael might be with us as well. Mr. Hulley, how you doing?
Mr. Goldman, good to speak to you again. You've been a busy this week with shows.
This is the third show this week, David. How about that?
I think it's probably better, actually, that we do the show when we're not getting beat every week, and we can be more positive.
Absolutely. And listen, we have so much to talk about, David. I'm coming up with show ideas left and right. You've already seen it. We had a great show last night. We had a great show earlier in this week with you and Craig. Now we have a great guest who I'm going to bring on in just a second, and Emilio hopefully will be joining us as well. I look forward to talking to Raphael, and what's interesting about him, Raphael has watched Slavisa Jokanović with Maccabi Tel Aviv, so he can share and shed some light about that, but he also really follows Brighton Hove Albion. So that is interesting as well to me. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be asking him to shed some light on how they made this incredible turnaround. And on top of that, then I definitely want to get his thoughts on Slavisa. But, David, it looks like Raphael's on the line, so why don't I bring him on? Sound good?
Great.
All right, here we go. Okay, joining us now all the way from Israel is BBC World Football correspondent Raphael Geller. Raphael, welcome back to Cottage Talk.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I know it's late where you are.
Perfectly fine. Happy to come on.
Okay, my friend. Listen, I've got several topics for us to go over with you. David will be asking you some questions as well, and I do have another co-host who should be joining us shortly, but I'll start you with some questions. And like I mentioned, one of the reasons why I wanted you on, three reasons. One actually involves David, and I'll actually start there, because you actually messaged me after Fulham got in on loan, Michael Matter. You told me, Russell, you're going to be very happy with him. And David was being a little negative on him because of the league that he played on. I'm happy to say, Raphael, you were right and David was wrong, so that starts off the show really well. Talk about Michael Matter and why you thought he would be a good fit for Fulham. Let's start there.
Well, basically I enjoy watching the leagues that nobody enjoys watching for a lot of reasons, usually because there's an Israeli playing in that league, and just I like those kind of leagues. I like the Austrian league, the Swiss league, the smaller leagues that have a lot of talent that come out but don't get that much attention. I speak to a lot of Austrians on a regular basis, sometimes even every day, especially during busy times. And it was very clear that Michael was a player that had no business being, I wouldn't say in the Austrian Bundesliga, but on his team, because Sturm is traditionally a mid-table team, and it just was – had so much class, and almost every single person who watched a lot of the matches were, first of all, disappointed that he had a really difficult time breaking in to the Austrian national team, because basically if you're a good Austrian, you play in the German Bundesliga. That's basically, I think, something like 12 players on their team in the Euros are in the Bundesliga. He's one of those players that kind of bloomed. Lady started off with Austria Vienna, which is one of the two big clubs in Vienna, and one of the traditional three big clubs, with Red Bull Salzburg becoming powerhouse the last few years. But he didn't find his way there, and then he really kind of went to very small clubs, and then finally he signed with Sturm, which is a traditionally strong team, like I said, in the mid-table, and he just got better and better there every year. And I just, when I saw that he was moving to the championship, I knew that that's the type of level he should play at. I don't think, you know, he's a guy that's going to go to the Premier League and be strong. But for the championship, it seemed like a perfect fit. And he was always this guy that you were wondering, what is he doing on this small team? why don't one of the bigger clubs in Austria pick him up? And they weren't interested. I mean, the bigger clubs just weren't interested in him. So, again, just to conclude, I didn't see any reason why he wouldn't do well at Fulham, and I'm glad to see that I was right.
You were right, and I'm going to bring David back on because David says he needs to correct me on something. David, what do you have to correct me on?
Well, I don't think I was quite like that when we signed Maddle. I just said, obviously, I was concerned that, you know, he might find it difficult coming from the Austrian League to the Championship, and also that he wasn't very tall for a central defender, but I did also say at the same time, you know, I judge him on his merits when he's come, and I'm happy to say that, you know, I've been very pleased with him. But it's not quite I said that he was going to be rubbish and then he was good. I give every player the benefit of the chance
you
to
do,
see how they perform. And Fulham's a difficult place to come. We've signed a lot of people who have probably got as good, if not better, pedigrees than Maddle, supposedly, and yet they failed. So, you know, the pedigree counts for nothing sometimes. It's about getting the right pieces in the jigsaw. And Maddle does seem to be the right fit in the jigsaw so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And Raphael, you know, they picked up the option, so he's now a Fulham player, and we're all happy about that. Now it's about who's going to play with Michael Maddle, because Michael Maddle, we feel, is a center back that will be a regular with Fulham, and he should be. He really impressed us. But let's move on, because the second topic I wanted to have you on involved Brighton and Hove Albion, and you follow them fairly closely. So just start here. Give us an overview of why you feel Brighton were able to turn around from 20th two seasons ago all the way to third this season. Just an overview of how they were able to do it.
Well, you know, we live in a time where money is very important, especially in the bigger leagues in Europe, and I think what was so successful about Brighton is they decided not to go that route. They decided to go with good scouting and bring in players that, trying to think of a good way to word it, but it's a common theme. Bring in players that have maybe in the past supposed to have gone to bigger clubs, but it didn't work out, whether it was injury, whether it was form, and see if these guys can do it on a championship level. And, you know, starting off with Tom Kemed, who ended up with, 17 goals and being one of the top strikers. They bought him for $1 million. I mean,
I'm looking at it right now. I cannot believe that. $1 million. Go ahead.
They bought him for nothing. Anyone who follows Kemed, which is not a lot of people, but know that he was a guy who was always on a really, really bad La Liga team. Really, really bad. Always a team scrapping for relegation. He always seemed to score 8 to 10 goals. So a lot of people in Spain would start to say, you know, if he had a solid midfield, if he was on a better team, you know, who knows what would happen. And at one point, interestingly enough, a few years ago, he almost signed with Everton. He was very close to Everton, and there was a lot of excitement about him. And then he tore his Achilles, and it really, really just kind of destroyed his career. And there was a lot of talk that he was just going to end up coming back to Israel and signing with the big team here, et cetera. But they took a chance on him. And, you know, when he first signed there, I was kind of – it was a weird signing. No one saw it coming. It wasn't anything in the media about it. It got announced. And that's kind of similar also to how they did their business with several of the players. I mean, they got some really good players on loan. I think that, you know, when you're in the championship, and you guys know this better than anyone, you always need to try and get those players that, you know, are guys that are not playing in the Premier League, but have plenty of talent to be in the championship and just need playing experience. And it's kind of like how you decide who are the right guys to do this, because we do see a lot of these guys come from the Premier League and then they're terrible. But for example, if you look at Steve Sidwell, for example, coming over from Stoke, I mean, an older guy, you know, in his 30s, I don't remember exactly how old he is, but a guy who many people say is maybe not good enough for the Premier League, even though he had, you know, you guys know him. Clearly, you know
we
him
do.
Very well. And he just fit the system perfectly. I mean, it's basically very smart executives doing almost everything perfect and getting the perfect team, whether, you know, it's bringing Bobby Zamora in just to be the guy in the locker room who the players looked up to. I mean, he didn't really do much all season, but it wasn't really why he was brought in. If you look at why he was brought in, it was more to help him. And James Wilson, for example, from United, a guy that clearly was never going to break into United, and, you know, might not, you know, he's only 20 years old, but you look at who's at United now, and there's a good chance that he's probably going to go on loan somewhere next year. So it's hard. And he didn't have an amazing season, but he happened to score goals that always mattered. Then you have the combination of getting really good foreign players that might be guys that, you know, aren't, again, it's building the perfect team. I mean, that's how I look at it. And it's the executives know exactly what they're doing and building a team that there's no star on this team. There's no superstar. There's Khemed's not a star. Behram Keyal, who had an amazing season and was voted the best player of the team and was in many, you know, I saw many of the best 11 of the season from different publications. He was in the midfield there. He's also not a superstar. It's like you just go through the roster. I mean, I could go with you, but Bruno.
No, I'm looking at it right now, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but what's interesting, because I want to talk to you about this, because I'm looking at it and I'm thinking about something that we've been talking about with Fulham moving forward. All the pieces have to fit together. When I watched Brighton this year, all the pieces fit together. And they did it not spending a tremendous amount of money. They spent some money. Like I'll give you, you talked about Hamed as a bargain at £1 million. How about getting Anthony Narkar for £2.63 million? That's,
but
you know, and
right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but he's phenomenal. I mean, he's a guy that I don't understand what he's doing. Don't understand what he's doing in the championship. I mean,
right.
He was my favorite players to play, and in that playoff game. What was it, the final first playoff game, he could have scored 4 goals in it. And he also comes from, you know, he played for Leicester, obviously, when they were in the championship. But he had the pedigree. I mean, he played in the first division of France. He played in the championship. He played at Standard Liège, which people who don't know is a huge club in Belgium. I mean, it's one of the notorious, famous clubs that so many good players have gone from. It's a bit surprising how he ended up on this team that many people didn't expect much out of. It's like I'm saying, I know I'm not. It's just that they literally built a perfect team, whether it was free transfers or small transfers.
Right.
And it's sad because a lot of the guys are going back now to their teams, the guys they had on loan, and there's a good chance that this Brighton team could go back down to, you know, being a mid-table team next year. And that's kind of the disappointing part about it, because it's not like the Premier League where you necessarily have
long shelf life.
Like, you know, there's lots of talk that Khemed and Keyal are going to get some interest in the Premier League, and Anthony that we spoke about might be able to hop back after having a lot of good performances and lose their guys on loan. They let go Calderon. I think Bruno staying. There's all, you know, the whole team is going to be a completely different team. So it's the issue of can they do what they did this summer again? that's actually difficult. That's really, really difficult. So that's tricky.
No, very, very interesting because I'm looking at the money spent. You know, you mentioned Hamed $1 million, and I'm just looking at a bunch of free transfers. You know, like you mentioned, I'll mention Bong was a free transfer, Joe Ward free transfer, Bobby Zamora free transfer, and then you have Manu £1.5 million, like I mentioned, Narkar £2.63 million, Skalik came in the January transfer window £1.28 million. So it's not like they spent this exorbitant amount of money on one player. They spread it out, and they mixed it with some free transfers, and they just found the right pieces to fit. Is that the best way to describe how they did it?
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is it's the guys upstairs know what they're doing. I mean, they're not signing, you know, they're not doing what, I mean, obviously, like what Middlesbrough did by signing these players for, what, £10 million, they have the money to do it, and it worked and promoted and whatever, but there's a different way to do it, and clearly this worked. I mean, it's really unfortunate because if they did get promoted, this would be a way bigger story, you know, going from
right.
20th place, never being a club that's, you know, south of London and is kind of this resort city, similar to Mallorca in Spain. Like, no, like it's kind of this like resort area that people talk about. It's a paradise to live in, and they've never been in the Premier League. They've been in the first division before it was the Premier League, and they had a perfect season. I mean, the end was really tragic. There's no other, I mean, they all, out of all the teams that didn't get promoted, there's no way anyone would argue with you that it was the saddest that they didn't. For, I mean, all their hard work, the what was it, 20 plus games unbeaten, so many things. I mean, they only lost 5 matches. They were the first team ever in the history of the championship, I think, to lose 5 matches and not get promoted. I mean, you're looking at Hull City lost 11 matches, Middlesbrough lost 9 matches. They lost 5 matches and did not get promoted, and it started off with 2 games before the end of the season of it being okay. If we win this game, we're going to be promoted at home. Then they ended up drawing, I think, in the 95th minute. Wilson scored a goal. Then the last game against Middlesbrough, they needed to win and they lost. And then it just, you know, after that, people know what happened in the playoffs.
Right.
Everything just went to hell. Pardon my language, but. Everything just the worst thing that could happened, and it just happened to the worst. I mean, it was so sad because you work so hard. The championship is one of the longest seasons in Europe, and they just got really bad luck, and there's nothing you can really do about it. And now, maybe, who knows, maybe next year they could be back to being a mid table or even worse team. I mean, we've seen it happen.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's tragic.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And listen, before I ask you about Chris Hughton, because again, I want to ask you about Hughton, and that will help us then talk about Slavica. What exactly went wrong in the playoffs? You know, I think it was unfortunate what happened with Tomer Hamed. You know, him not being there for the second leg, I think, is what was the difference. Am I wrong to think that? Because they kept knocking on the door. They kept, you know, they had so many opportunities in that second leg, but they just couldn't. They couldn't convert, and I kept thinking if Hamed was there, maybe the situation would be different. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Hamed went off in the first half of the first leg, so already that was a problem. You know, they had four injuries. Luckily, a couple of the players were able to come back, but James Wilson was starting that match, and no disrespect to him, but he's 20 years old, and to be put in a position to, you know, be starting in a semifinal match. I mean, that's a lot of pressure for a 20-year-old who has a lot of talent, but it's, you know, that's not who you want as your traditional striker. And you know, you have you have, what's his name? I always mispronounce his name. Lua, I think. That's how I pronounce it. I don't know if that's how other people pronounce it, but I think it is. He's been there for a few years, and he can come in and get a nice goal. But, again, these are the guys that you count on to be secondary players. The way the season ended, I mean, after the first leg, when they lost all these players, and I think that match was on a Friday or Friday, and then the second leg was on a Monday or Tuesday. They couldn't believe what happened. It was almost like first of all, they thought we shouldn't have never even been in the playoffs. I mean, they're like, what the hell are we doing in the playoffs? And then after the first leg of losing, what was it, 2-0, 2-0, that was even more shocking. Because it was almost just like 10 days before they were going to the Premier League, they just needed to win at home. I forget who that was against. They were down 1-0, and then they scored a goal in the 95th minute, but it really didn't mean anything. And the Middlesbrough barely lost at home, and it was in Middlesbrough. So it's just like basically like 1 second they were in the Premier League, and the next second they were down 2-0 in the semifinals of the playoffs after a really long season. So I don't know, it was a disaster. There's no other, and really like Sheffield Wednesday, I mean, we had a good year, but nothing special. I mean, they should have won. I mean, Brighton should have won, but that's not how football works. It's not how football works, and it's just unfortunate that's what happened. But and then you saw Hull obviously is now in, and I was not surprised that Hull won the final. It's just and the last thing, the goal that Sheffield Wednesday scored in the second leg was one of the weirdest. I don't know if you guys remember it, but it was weird. It was a fluke goal, and after that goal, it was done. I mean, it became 1-1, and they needed to win like 4-1, and it was just one sad, tragic thing after the other, and I don't know, what can I say? It's just, it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah. All right. Before we transition, and I'm going to bring David back on in a second because I'm sure he has a question or two about what Brighton did. Because, again, the reason why I'm having you on is to see what they did. Can Fulham do the same thing? And there have been some fans that have been taking some shots at me because, like, why do you keep on doing this comparison to Brighton? And that, you know, and I, that's why I wanted to bring you on, because I find some interesting parallels, Raphael. And I'm just going to share one before I ask you your thoughts on Chris Hughton. What's interesting about Chris Hughton, the season before when he came in the middle of the season, he had 6 wins, 6 draws. This is underneath him, and 10 losses. What's interesting, Slavisa, in his first season with Fulham, 6 wins, 6 draws, 10 losses. The exact same results. Okay? I've not shared that with anyone except my co-host. It's fascinating that Hughton and Slavisa had the exact same start to their careers with their current teams. How about that?
Yeah, I did not know that. That's a good stat. So that is a good stat.
So tell me a little bit about Hughton.
Listen, if Hughton was took up, if I'm not going to pretend I'm a big Hughton expert, because I'm not. Clearly, the thing that I do know from reading a lot of interviews and speaking with the guys who cover Brighton a lot, because there's not a lot of them. There's only a few of them, I've gotten a good relationship with them because of Kayal is also Israeli, Baram Kayal. He's a guy who the players love because he doesn't attack them in the media. I mean, even after everything that went wrong in the last 2 weeks of the season, he stayed very calm. He explained how disappointing it was, but he kept morale up, and he didn't start attacking your players, which a lot of managers would do. And he's a guy who, you know, obviously was a big player in his time, which is similar to Slavisa, but not. I mean, Slavisa, you know, played in Spain a lot and was at Chelsea and et cetera, et cetera. But he's a guy that the players really respect, and he's a guy that always stays calm. I mean, if you watch any of the matches, the last four matches, with everything going on, the camera kept zooming in on him with the expectation that he would be, you know, look angry or start screaming at his players. But the whole time, even in the 85th minute when it was, you know, in the second leg when it was clear that it was over because they weren't going to score three goals in 5 minutes, he stayed very calm, and I think very calm and collected, and realized there's nothing I can do. My players gave it their all. And he praised them repeatedly in interviews after the season. So that's the type of manager that a lot of players want to, you know, play for. You know, there's some guys who like the Mourinho or the Pep or those kind of styles where passive aggressive and meet, you know, you attack your players, media, you don't, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, you attack other managers. He's a classy guy who obviously has been at big clubs before. I mean, if you look at his track record, this is the smallest club he's been at by far.
Right, right.
Norwich is up and down in the Premier League, and obviously, you know, Newcastle is Newcastle. No matter what, how good they are, not good they are, they have 42,000, 43,000 season ticket holders every year. I think even more now, but that was just a couple of years ago. And Birmingham City, and being in Birmingham, doesn't matter how good you are. So, he, you know, like you said, when he came in, he came into a really bad squad last winter, but he already started to bring in some of his guys. He already started to build this team with, and the big guy around it was Bahram Keal. And a lot of people were wondering, like, why was a guy like Bahram Keal going to this, like, very average championship side that always actually, like, the last few years has had big-name managers and always seemed to make the top six, but then always kind of screws it up. Because with all due respect to Chris Hughton, who did a really good job this year, a lot of the managers not last year when they were almost relegated, but Oscar Garcia did a really good job there.
That's right.
The year before that, I think they almost also finished in the top six. So it's not like the club is not used to getting to the top six or top eight. It's more that they haven't been able to get the job done. And it's kind of like, is this maybe now a curse that this team has been able to make it now to the semifinals of the playoff and then they keep losing, especially in a year like this? So, you know, it's tricky, but I think he's the type of guy that is well-respected around the league. And I'm talking not just in the championship, but also in the Premier League. He's a guy that people, you know, you don't always look at the wins and losses. Sometimes it's much more
right.
than that. And I think sometimes people, fans of clubs, forget that just because they want results. And, you know, what was that? I read on the BBC the other day that like 100 managers or something, or 70 managers got sacked out of all four leagues. I mean, there's patience now. It's not even in England anymore. It's everywhere, whether it's in Israel or Mexico or China. You know, if you're, it doesn't even matter who you have on your squad. If you're not doing well, you're done. Because
right.
they think there's someone who's going to do better. So I think he's a really respected guy. Now, I don't, if we're going to start to draw parallels with Slavisa, they're very different guys. In terms of their demeanor, I think their style, I think they're clashing with the front office, with their how they are with the media. I think it's very different, but that's my opinion.
Okay, very, very good. Thank you so much, Raphael, for really painting the picture about Brighton, because obviously now we're going to really focus on Slavisa and Fulham. But before I do that, I want to bring David back on the line. David's been nice on hold while we've been talking about. David, what are your thoughts about what what Rafael had to share about Brighton. Any questions for you? Any thoughts?
Well, hi again, Rafael. Nice
Hello.
To have you back, of course.
Thank you.
We spoke before. I mean, it's a very interesting point because I think, as you said, that you know they're very different people. Chris Hughton is very different to Slavisa, and Brighton is a club perhaps at a different phase than Fulham. Obviously, Brighton are ahead of the curve compared to Fulham, as the last season would have proved. But at the end of the day, for all the good work, they're still in the same division as Fulham. So, you know, it was good, but it wasn't quite good enough. But you know, for me, I'm not sure, though, Rafael, whether Russ has just looked at two pieces of statistics here. You know, the fact that the first few games for Chris Hughton and the first few games for Slavisa had a similar pattern. I think Russ is hoping, obviously, that our season next season will be like Brighton's was this season. But I'm not sure if you can really compare light for light. To me, they're both very, very different animals. What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, look, the optimist in Russ wants to hope that you guys, you know, get back to where you should be, because you look at, you know, before I got ready to talk to you guys, I was just thinking of London clubs, and you look at what Crystal Palace have been able to do. Obviously, they had a pretty crappy second half of the season, but they made it to the FA Cup final, and they're back in the Premier League. It's almost sad that they are and you're not, in terms of tradition and in terms of what, you know, Fulham used to mean and all the great players that have played at Fulham and how almost Fulham ended up being in the third division in League One. So, I don't know. I mean, you have to look at what they're going to do this summer. You have to look at if it's about spending money. I mean, you have a lot of guys, I think, that want to leave, correct me if I'm wrong, or that might leave, or that you might be tempted to leave. But this team that you had last year, just similar to Chris, is not a Slavisa-built team.
Correct.
And that's, you know, why you couldn't really judge them at all last year. The goal was to keep them not relegated, which honestly is kind of a pathetic goal, but it was the goal nonetheless. No, you have to say the truth. I mean, that's a weird goal to give a manager when they weren't, you know, in dead last place for the whole season. You know, he did what he had to do. There's nothing. I mean, not to be impressed or disimpressed, but there's nothing really to judge. He kept them in, and now he needs to build a team and he needs to start right away. I mean, he needs to,
exactly,
to get going. And there's lots of very, you know, interesting talent, whether it's the American, the 20-year-old who has a lot of attention. I've seen him linked to lots of places. Emerson Hyman. You have to have confidence that he can build the right team and that he can make a lot of changes. But you know, it's hard going from whatever 18th place, whatever you guys were, to the top in a year without things really clicking almost perfectly. I mean, with Brighton, it was like a perfect, like the players on loan were perfect. The veteran the veterans they brought in were perfect. The youngsters they brought in were perfect. The signings they made were perfect. And even with everything being perfect, like that wasn't enough.
Right.
They're still in the championship. They lost out on what, £150 million. But you would think that the goal is to make the playoffs. I mean, to be in the top, be in the
totally.
Top six, and see what happens from there. Because you see, with Sheffield, you know, they finished sixth, and you know they made it to the finals and lost, barely lost, you know, 1-0. And so you never know. And that's a fun thing, I guess, about the championship is the way it's built. Is you don't have to finish in the top three. You can squeeze in at number six on the last day of the season, and then get lucky in the playoffs. And, you know, number six can be 15, 16, even 20 points off from second and first, which I think with Brian, I think Brian was 15 points ahead of Sheffield when they played each other. So it's almost also the system is a bit, you know, it goes both ways. Brian fans could say, how could, you know, we're 5 wins ahead of this club and we have to play them for the same thing, but that's the way it is. So right. I don't think you can assume, you know, go right away to be the, you know, to be number one or number two, because also we didn't even talk about this yet, but the championship next year, if the clubs that got relegated, you know, there's two options in my opinion with them. It's either going to be like really like a very sad collapse with Aston Villa and Newcastle, as in they're going to just get, you know, things are just going to go downwards quickly, or they're going to be at the top very quickly. They're going to be the two teams that are from the moment the season starts, they're going to be the favorites, and the owners, you know, the Chinese owner at Aston Villa is going to spend the money, and Rafa Benitez said, you know, to Ashley, you know, I'm only staying if, you know, you give me a lot of money and you make it clear that we're going to fight to go up immediately, not in a couple of years, but immediately, as in a couple of weeks, we're going to see big, big signings, or they're going to try and convince some of their guys who are clearly have no business playing in the championship, convincing them to stay, which right. would also be a big coup for them. So the championship next year is, you could argue it's going to be an extremely difficult year. You add the fact that Norwich, you know, also is going to be competitive, and Cardiff had a nice run towards the end, and if Brighton does come back and Birmingham's gotten better and in a new direction,
it's a tough league. It's a tough league, Raphael.
It's a really tough league. I mean,
yeah, it is.
It's a really tough league.
It is. And David, before I go to Raphael, I'm going to counter what you would say. You're thinking I'm just going on that comparison with Chris Hughton and Slavica. What I'm also going on is how much they changed their team. How much, Raphael has just explained, how many players changed from one season to another, gave Chris Hughton a chance to build his team. David, 13 players over the summer that were transfers. 13. They added an additional 4 in loan, and then in the January transfer window, they added an additional 5. So there is a huge amount of players that they brought in. So this idea that you can't change your team, I disagree with you. Can Brighton had done it, but as Raphael had mentioned, it really was the perfect storm to get to where they were. But who knows? Like you said, it's a tough league. Who knows? All right.
Yeah, I mean, you need a lot of luck, basically.
You do, you do. But Raphael, anyone that listens to this show knows that I am the eternal optimist. So I am thinking, I look at Brighton, I'm like, why can't we do that? That's the way I'm looking at it. That's part of the reason why I wanted to have you on. But let's
maybe
talk
you can.
About well, exactly. Maybe you can. Right, exactly. That's the point. Okay. Let's now focus on directly on Fulham. We spent a lot of time talking about Brighton. This is a Fulham show, so we have to really focus on Fulham. What did you make of Savic's time with Fulham since he came over? Like you said, it really wasn't his team, and he was really just looking to help the team survive. So analyze the job he did.
I mean, I think he did a good job. I think at the beginning, maybe he needed to get used to the championship because obviously it sounds a bit weird, but when you leave a league for a year and you go to a completely different league, you have to put all your you have to put all your eggs in the basket on that league and kind of almost forget about the previous league, which would be his time at Watford, and focus entirely on not only on the Israeli Premier League, but getting your team ready to play against Chelsea, Porto, and Dynamo Kiev, all three really good teams. So I think he had to kind of get a knock in the head of being back in the championship, and that, you know, took maybe a lot longer than expected. I could say that took 7-10 matches where fans were saying, well, he was at Watford less than a year ago and he got them promoted, but he should come in and immediately do this and that. And that wasn't the case. But I think once time settled and he saw what he had to work with, he got a couple of key wins and a couple of key draws. And, you know, speaking to Fulham supporters on Twitter, it seemed like what I was thinking, they also seemed to agree with. He just needed a little time to get settled in. But I think the biggest issue is what's going to happen with him and the ownership, and whether they're willing to kind of go with what he wants. Because the Watford story is a bit more complicated than was reported. There was a lot of things with money. I mean, look what Watford did this year. A lot of people don't really understand why they sacked their manager after they had a pretty, good season. But that goes back to what we were talking about. But, the numbers aren't impressive. Like you said, the numbers aren't impressive. But the numbers aren't impressive, but then it wasn't a good team. I mean, it wasn't a good team before he got there. And he didn't make it a much better team. But is that his fault? I mean, I don't know. You guys would know that better than me. He did what he had to do, and now it's time to get to work. I mean, you can judge him already by November, I think, on if the team is going to be a team that's going to compete for the top. Now, there's a lot of things that are similar to Brighton in a way that I think you're going to lose a lot of players, but you're going to have to bring in a lot of – you're going to have to bring in 10 – 12 players. So the question
exactly is, that was my comparison with David that I wanted to mention, because I looked at what Brighton did and I'm thinking Fulham are probably going to do something similar, bringing in a bunch of players.
I think you're going to have to. So the question is where he's going to bring them in from, and that's the question I've gotten on Twitter a lot. I don't know if it's the same. I think it's the same assistants that were with Maccabi. So these guys are mostly Spanish guys. I don't know if he has someone. Telling them who to bring in from
he's
the
championship. He's been in Spain, by the way. He's already been spotted in Spain.
Well, he's been all over. He was in Serbia.
That's right.
He was in Serbia watching Israel against Serbia, which definitely wasn't a coincidence. There's lots of really good players in Serbia that nobody would know about except Serbians. and I'm talking about Red Star and Partizan. I mean, you look at the guys going from Red Star to Liverpool and Red Star. So why not go from Red Star to Fulham? Why not, why not make the jump there? But he's the type of guy that, because of his history of, not managing necessarily in traditional places, whether it's Bulgaria, second division Spain. I'm not even going to talk about Thailand because that's just irrelevant. But he's an interesting character because one of the reasons why he came to Maccabi and this folds to Fulham is that he has a Spanish connection. I think Fulham fans need. He played many, many years in Spain. I think it was something like 7-8 years. But it's more than that. He still has a lot of friends in Spain. One of the reasons why he came to Maccabi was because of Jordi Cruyff. And Jordi Cruyff, the joke is that Jordi Cruyff is more Catalonian, or I think, is it, you say Catalonian?
Yep.
I think that's what. Than Dutch, because he was born and raised in Barcelona, and his family's still in Barcelona, and Johan Cruyff, I believe, died in Barcelona. So I would, if I'm a Fulham fan, I look to bottom teams in La Liga, teams that maybe even got relegated or teams that barely got relegated, and he's going to try and bring in guys from there who think, if they can play in La Liga and do well, why can't they come to the championship and do well? And that's
sure.
Something that he did at the Maccabi players were Spanish guys who were very solid guys in not necessarily the big clubs in Spain, not the Valencias, or I'm not even going to talk about the top three, but in the middle, Valencia, Sevilla, Celta, but the smaller teams that, you have to watch La Liga to really know what I'm talking about, and even second division teams.
Sure.
So I see him bringing in a lot of guys from there. I see him going there and make you can make good deals with a lot of these teams in La Liga because these teams are broke. The TV money is not at all what it is in any other league, really. Even compared to the Bundesliga, the teams in the bottom are not making a lot of money. The stadiums are not always full. It's not like the Premier League or the Championship. The stadiums are half empty when it's, you know, two middle teams playing each other. And you can make good deals. I mean, you can sign players for £1 million, £1.5 million, and that's, you know, for them, that's almost €2 million, and that goes a long way. So I think you're going to see him make a lot of moves with players that maybe you're not going to be able to get that much information about, except if you go to Soccerway or Google, because they're going to be players that come from smaller teams in Spain or bigger teams in Bulgaria or, hell, maybe even Israel.
Right.
So,
well, let me ask you, are you hearing any names in Israel that have been linked to Fulham?
Not right now, but, you know, there are lots of players on Maccabi Tel Aviv or in Israel that could easily play in Fulham. It wouldn't surprise me if he tried to make a move. Now, the thing is, like, they're expensive. You know, it's not going to be cheap. So that's why I think it's more likely for him to go. It's pretty ironic, though, that the players from La Liga will be cheaper than players from Israel.
That is crazy.
That's sometimes how it is. You have to understand that every league, you have to understand the dynamics of every league, the teams from every league, because every league has that team that really, money-wise, is 90% better than probably every other league except, you know, the really big ones. In that case, Maccabi Tel Aviv, you know, you have players making over €1 million, where you don't make, no one makes that in La Liga if you're in the bottom. I mean, you don't make that. Coaches don't make that. So I think you can see an interesting team next year with a lot of guys from Spain that can come in and do really well. And it'll be Slavisa's network of whether it's assistants, playing days, scouts, et cetera, he'll be able to know who to bring in. When it comes to the British guys, when it comes to other guys from the Championship, that's something you guys would know way better than me. But I see him going to his roots, which is Spain, and bringing guys over and getting good deals done.
Yep.
And really, I think also importantly, he's trying to keep these young guys that are so talented that want to move on by saying to them, I'm going to build a good team. I'm going to build an attractive team. We're going to compete for the Premier League. Why don't you stay with us? Yes, the money's not going to be the same as if you go to Tottenham. But if you go to Tottenham, you might not play. You might sit on the bench all year. Where if you can stay here, you can compete. You can get even more attention by being a team in the top. You know, Fulham has the name already. So if Fulham's in the middle of the year already in the top four, there'll be more mentions, more scouts, more interest. And that's all, you know, front office, that's the management, that's the thing. That's the owner convincing these guys that it's worth staying. Now, we live in modern football where money talks and they want to leave even if they know they're not going to play. So that's also a manager's job, is to convince them. Now, if it's January and the team is in 12th, 14th place and he made 12, 14 moves, then there's a problem, because that's not what he was brought there to do. I mean, he wasn't brought there to be a manager who's going to get guys to the mid table and settle for that for the next couple of years. He'll be sacked by January if that's the case. So it's in a way, you know, to conclude, it's exciting, I think, because you're either going to fail miserably or you're going to do well. I don't really see like a
middle ground. You don't see a middle ground here.
Just because that he knows that he's there to push up.
Yeah.
You know, you look at a lot.
So he's going to go for it, is what you're saying, Raphael.
He's going to
build a team that he believes can get promoted, basically.
Yeah, like I said, I based on who's there already, I don't think, you know, first or second place having 89 points is realistic. But 70 points, 75 points, you know, squeaking in to the 5-6 and then seeing what happens. If you see her in the 5-6 in January, then saying, hey, we're in it. Let's bring it. Let's spend a couple million pounds and bring in guys who can help us. Because like I said, if it's, you know, January 2017 and you're in 12th, 14th place and you're going nowhere, he's done. I mean, he's done. So it's really, I think you'll be able to tell quickly. And I don't remember when the championship starts. I'm guessing it starts similar to the Premier League. It's already June, you know, soon, the Euros end, and then it's July, and then suddenly the season starts soon. And, you know, luckily you guys don't have Europa League qualifiers or anything like that, because then, you know, the season could start in 2 weeks. So he has time. He's working. He didn't just go to Serbia to watch the Israel-Serbia game for fun. That's not an exciting game to watch, I can tell you that. So he's working, and I would just have faith. That's all you can do, and I think you have the right guy. And, you know, hopefully he'll lead you to the promised land.
I hope so, my friend. I hope so, my friend. David's been waiting patiently. I know David has some questions. David, sorry. Do you have questions for Rafael?
I'm not sure if it's so much questions, Rafa. I just sort of, you know, comments really about some of the things you said. And, you know, again, when obviously you talked about the Brighton comparison, I think we need probably to change more players than they did. It really is that dire. And
right.
You say about players wanting to leave. I think it's the other way around, actually. The majority is that the fans want most of the players to leave, I think, more than the players want to leave themselves. There's several players who are on, you know, fairly long contracts still who, you know, just don't seem to be good enough, and we're hoping we'll see the back of them, really. So it's a massive thing, and, you know, you touched on what I felt as well. I agree with completely that the perfect storm scenario, to get it all sorted in one season, he has to work miracles, and he needs luck as well to change that many people, to change literally a whole first team perhaps around, to fit all those pieces of the jigsaw together and get it to click first time up is a big ask. And you know, we've had issues at Fulham, you know, and there's other factors as well, whereas perhaps Brighton is perhaps a smaller, more closely knit club. Fulham, there's questions about, you know, the people running the club, there's questions about the owner, whether they have the right input. Remote there. So all these things you have to kind of factor into the equation. So, you know, I know Russ is the ultimate optimist. I mean, if it was physically possible, Russ would have us challenging Leicester for the Premiership title next season. That's not true.
That's not true. I'm looking at Leicester City in a couple of seasons. I'm kidding.
Yeah, maybe a slight hyperbole there, Rafael. But
yeah,
I mean,
slight.
I find it very difficult to imagine, much as I want it to happen, that we'll be up the top, you know, because of the other teams coming down as well. Norwich always there or thereabouts. Normally they're up and down. So I think it's going to be very difficult for us. But, you know, from a Fulham point of view, the interesting thing I think for Slavica is that I think it's been an eye-opener, him coming to Fulham. I think that it's been a shock to him personally as much as it has been for everybody else, because I think he came here and he thought, you know, I can do something with these players here already. Maybe not everything I need to do, but I can work with most of them and get us going. And I think it's been a shock to his system that he's actually looked at it and thought, my God, they really are that bad. I can't work with these guys. And then he ended up, you know, he's ended up having to try and fudge a formation now. You know, he's abandoned any sort of trying to play attacking football or anything exciting with a very, you know, a rudimentary. He played four centre-backs and four central midfielders for, you know, a lot of the last part of the season.
Yeah.
Just trying to play this very, very tight, narrow unit to keep us strong. And he had the limited success where we had the three wins on the trot, which ultimately made us safe and gave us a bit of a margin. But I think the fans, on one hand, the fans were expecting him to come in and to turn things around, to look at our players and say, actually, these players are not so bad. They've just been badly managed or badly coached in the past. But in fact, Slavica is the man to do it. And then when it didn't happen, it's a bit of a shock, I think, for the fans. But it's also, I think it's a shock for Slavica. I don't think he realised how bad it is and the task, the real uphill task he's got. And this is going to be the real mark of his character. Not only has he got to go out there and find a whole new team, but he's got to get them to fit together and to click and to start moving upwards. And that's going to be, you know, I think it's a project for more than one season, personally.
Well, we'll see, David. You know, you are the eternal pessimist. So you and I clash here. You think that it's all going to go wrong, and I think it's going to go right. That's just your perception is different than mine. Yes, Raphael's talking about a perfect storm. You know, that's how it all happened with Brighton. But I've seen it with other teams too. I don't think I disagree with your pessimism, and I'll go with my optimism any day of the week. Sorry, David.
I can tell you guys this. I can tell you something that's interesting. Three things really quickly. One, if you talk to Brighton fans and you talk to Brighton journalists, everyone for the most part is very happy with the way the club is run in terms of the owner, in terms of everything, in terms of scouting. So that might be a big difference there between Brighton fans and Fulham fans in terms of Khan and whether you want Khan out. Because at the end of the day, money's not the issue there. He's one of the richest people. You know, he's a billionaire, blah, blah, blah. That's one. Two, Lavisa came from one situation where he was in the Champions League. His team was the best team in Israel by far. He was playing attacking fall. You know, he had a guy who scored 20 goals already by December. And basically what I'm trying to say is he came from being in first place in his league and being, you know, a clear favorite to win the title to going to 20th place in a much more difficult league. And I think it's possible that he didn't really put the pieces together and he was expecting, I'm going to come from Israel and turn things around quickly and everything will be fine, blah, 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 blah. But I think it's also important to remember, and I don't think anyone does remember it, which is fine, is that he came from a scenario where his team had the highest budget, his team had the best players, his team was in the Champions League. I mean, everything was riding high. His team was in first place. His team, you know, to go from that to last place or 20th place or whatever it was when he got there, that's not common in a season for a manager to go from first place to 20th place and go from having to compete to win the title to having to compete to be relegated. If you think about it, it really doesn't happen a lot. I guess it happened with Benitez, and guess what happened there? They got relegated.
Right.
You know, he went from Madrid to Newcastle, and whatever. I don't know if that's a comparison, but you get what I'm saying. He just went from two different scenarios. So whether it's a long-term project, I guess my question for you guys to end is he going to be given time for it to be a long-term project? Based on how it looks like with all these managers getting sacked, if he does a big overhaul, is it going to, you know, if they're in 12th, 14th place in January, is Khan going to say, okay, you know, you can have another summer? That's I guess, my, concern or thought.
No, listen, I totally understand, Raphael. And unfortunately, the show is ending. We only have a minute left, and it's a great topic. Unfortunately, we don't have time to really get into it. Will he have the time to build the team that he wants? I hope so. That's just me being hopeful. I hope he gets a chance to build the team. And listen, before you go, real quick, because I wanted to ask you this: if you could pick one manager to run your team, would it be Slavica or Houghton?
Ooh. That's a tricky question. I don't know if I can. My answer doesn't give an answer. So
okay,
I think that kind of gives the answer.
Okay, not a problem, my friend. Listen, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. You were fantastic, Raphael. Thank you so much.
Thanks to both of you guys. Have a good evening.
Okay, David, thank you as well. I'm sorry we argued at the end, as always.
You argued. I didn't.
Okay. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of College Talk. Before we go, just want to thank Raphael Gell for joining us. For David Holley and Russ Goldman, thank you again for listening to College Talk. Cheers.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night. Out of the car.
your boys and